I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is 12:03, July 25th, 2025. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us for the Friday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rachel Pearson, filling in for Rob Hart. A Chicago-born vision brand is experiencing rapid growth across the region. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, home buyers can turn a stale listing into an opportunity using the extra time on the market to negotiate a price, request repairs, or even gain some leverage. So joining us today on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group here in Chicago. Drew, glad to have you here. What exactly makes a listing stale?
Thanks, Rachel. Appreciate that. A stale listing simply is it's a listing that's been on the market longer than similar properties, and it really hasn't received any offers. And it, you know, some of those things vary by market, but you know, once a home sits beyond like the average number of days, it really becomes stale. It's not something that we hear a lot about today, but it's certainly out there.
Yeah, well, we've already, you know, you talk about the housing market and it seems to be synonymous with a lack of inventory. So for something to sit on the market longer than average, what seems to be the main I have to think price would be the main reason for that.
Yeah, right on. I mean, that is the first thing that people have gotten, you know, maybe the house next door to them had sold for a you know, inflated price. So they go ahead and mark theirs up to that inflated price. So overpricing your home will do that. The timing of the listing, you know, spring is usually the big time that people list their house. So if it's a winter time, maybe it's just the timing of when you put the house out there. Maybe your house is in an undesirable location. You know, properties that are in those less desirable areas, they're going to take a little bit longer to sell. And then the big thing here that people, when they drive by it, if they look at it and it looks like it, you know, needs some structural, work done to it, or it's cosmetically not appealing, those are things that are going to turn buyers off right away.
Yeah, well, okay, so apologies in advance to sellers who are hoping to get top dollar, because now we're going to talk about some hacks for buyers. What are some ways beyond price, or I know you talked about that there's some work to be done, but this has to put a little bit of leverage in the buyer's favor.
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, if I was to recommend to buyers today, don't take those off your list. Like those houses that might look stale, take a look at them, because it gives you some ability to negotiate now. Maybe you can put a little bit of a lower offer and get that price, that house at a good price. And you can work out some of the flexible terms. Maybe they're going to be willing to pick up your closing costs, or maybe they'll be able to fix some of the things that might be broken. There's going to be less competition too. I mean, if so many people are turning their cheek away from those might be the ones that you can capitalize on, because there's less folks looking at those. And then, you know what, you know, you're going to assume that, well, it's got structural damage. You can walk in there and it's not just structural damage. Maybe it's just that it is overpriced and, you know, you get yourself a sweet deal.
Well, and here's the worst thing they can say is no, right? You can put whatever offer you want on a house. So really not a whole lot of risk there for buyers. Let's turn now. And to be fair, let's talk about sellers. And what advice do you have so that they can avoid their listing going stale?
Yeah, that's fair too. Might as well talk to them, both of them, right? So, you know, I would say that look at your pricing. You know, re-examine that pricing strategy. Get a good comp on, you know, the homes that are comparable to what yours is. The number of bedrooms are the same. The bathrooms are the same, et cetera. Maybe consider doing some of those upgrades. Consider repairing some things. Make the thing look great cosmetically. Give it some good curb appeal. Work with people that are going to help you market this thing. But really, you know, be open to some of the offers that you get. Maybe you get an offer that is, you know, causing a little bit of flexibility in your terms and such, but hey, it's an offer and it'll get rid of the house for you.
All right, Drew, quickly, what's one piece of advice you would give buyers that are looking at these stale listings and they're willing to, you know, do a little bit of work, but they don't necessarily want to walk into an empty money pit?
Yeah, I would make sure that you're able to afford what you're walking into. Don't overestimate your ability, because the minute you get into it, it's more than what you thought it was. So make sure it is truly just that, maybe that cosmetic fix, but it's not something that's going to require professionals or a lot of big work to be done. And it's maybe something that you can handle.
Thanks so much, Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group. Coming up, a growing vision brand expands while staying connected to the Chicago community it serves.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, it's Entrepreneur Friday, part one, and we'll check back in with a man behind a growing Chicago eye care brand to discuss how he's scaling up while also maintaining a focus on neighborhood connections. Joining us now is Michael Kogelis, founder of Big City Optical, with 20 locations across the Chicagoland area, the newest at the Oak Brook Promenade. Michael, glad to have you here. Big City Optical, we know the name well here at WBBM News Radio, and you have just grown extensively since 2017. So I'm curious, you know, was this part of your original vision? How has it evolved as you've expanded over the years?
Good afternoon, Rachel. I certainly think that when you're an entrepreneur and you start a business, you have big dreams, and that's usually the beginning. I would say at this point, 20 stores into it, we've probably outpaced our vision, but that just means that we've reset new targets, and we're excited about continuing to expand and grow within the Chicagoland area.
What do you think sets Big City apart from other eye care stores or other chains? What makes it approach different, or is it just the way you're connecting to these communities?
Great question. You know, I would certainly say that we believe that in today's world, businesses that focus on their local communities is really important. There's lots of national retailers that we're up against every day, and they all have, you know, some type of great thing that they're working on internationally. And for us, when we think about how do we support our great neighborhoods, it's by contributing our time and financial support to local neighborhood causes. That way, you know, it's a person comes into Big City Optical to get an eye exam done for themselves or for their family. And in some cases, we're also the, you know, the same company that's supporting that neighbor's little league team or something else of interest to the neighborhood. You know, in 20 locations, the need varies greatly. And so we're from, you know, we're in neighborhoods like Pilsen up to North Andersonville, North Shore, and obviously now out in the western suburbs. So we continue to kind of move with the times and let the patient tell us what they need.
So what's next for Big City Optical? And I mean this pun, what do you have your sights set on?
We're certainly continuing to look at those neighborhoods throughout Chicago where we have not, don't have the presence that we would like. Most recently, the Old Town neighborhoods, very interesting to us. And then the western and southwestern suburbs to really complement the two stores that we have in both Oak Park and Oak Brook. We would like to continue to open locations out west and then southwest of there. So, you know, just continuing, we think that families that have lived in Chicago and decide they want to move to the suburbs, you know, want to find a Big City Optical near them so that they can keep the same great care that they really have come to love at a Big City Optical location in their neighborhood.
Thanks so much for joining us. Michael Kogelis, founder of Big City Optical. Up next, a new TSA test program helps families breeze through airport security.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The TSA's new Families on the Fly program adds kid-friendly lanes and pre-check discounts just in time for summer travel. Although it's not yet in Chicago, the concept is expanding. Let's talk about it with Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief at SheBuysTravel.com here in Chicago. And Cindy, I'm pretty sure every parent with a young child, their ears perked up at the sound of this story, because if it's one thing that we dread when traveling with a young child, it's getting through that TSA line.
Well, it's not so much the getting through the TSA line. It's the stink eye you get from all the people who don't have children who are in line behind you.
Those judgy stares. I know. Yeah, I don't want them crying
stares.
Either.
Exactly. And that's what's so great about it. And, you know, Homeland Security picked exactly the right airport to start it. They're going to start it in Orlando, which if you've ever flown through there, it is like a daycare center, right? Everybody's there to go to Disney World, and everybody's got kids. Most of them are sporting their Disney years waiting in the TSA lines to get through security. But so the things that you need to know about this, or the families need to know about this, is it's going to be a little slow roll. It's going to take them a little while to get things set, because it's going to require a lot of, you know, reconfiguration of the security lines. But it is the next step, right? A couple of years ago, they said we could leave the kids' shoes on, which was a big deal. But now there's going to be dedicated lines. So people who have younger, particularly younger children, because if you have kids who are older than 12, you know, they've got to do all the things that adults have to do anyway, if they have to take off their shoes and all that kind of stuff. But if you have little ones, especially if you've got strollers and, diaper bags and all of the accoutrements that go with little kids, it can take a long time to get through security. So now people, families like that will have their own lines. So everybody in that line will presumably be sympathetic and be going through the same stuff. So you're not going to get the stink eye from the business travelers, like, you know, I allowed 10 minutes to get to my gate and you've taken up 9 of my minutes.
Yeah. I have to think, too, that when you make that sort of separation, one, it's a stress relief for parents to know you're among good company. And then it's also a relief for those in the regular line to know that maybe those will move a little quicker, too.
Well, absolutely. And so there are a lot of little bits and pieces to this that we need to be aware of. It's only going to be in Orlando and Charlotte initially. And then the next rollout, also good choices, John Wayne Airport, which is the Santa Ana Airport in Southern California, which is the closest airport to Disneyland. So if you want to go to Disney on the West Coast, you'll also have the option of a family lane when you're coming home. And Honolulu's airport, which is also, you know, caters to a lot of families. So they've chosen them well, but it does sound like the rollout to the other 430-some airports in the U.S. is going to be a little slow. And the other thing is they've got to staff these up. So chances are, just like, you know, if you have TSA pre-check and you get to O'Hare really early, like a, you know, 5:30 flight or whatever, chances are the pre-check lanes aren't open. So you could have the same thing if it's a slow time. They might not open the family lanes. So it's something that families need to be aware of. And what I am always recommending, even if there is a dedicated family lane, get to the airport early. If you're traveling with kids, you know, don't skimp on the 2 hours ahead for domestic and 3 hours ahead for international. Just get there and just plan for entertaining the kids for a little while they wait. And the other thing that I always tell parents of little kids, because this happened to me when mine were little, make sure they understand what the security process is. If they have a lovey, you know, a stuffed animal, the thing that they always carry with them everywhere, that thing's going to have to go through the screener. So make sure that they understand before you get there, so there's not a meltdown when they take the teddy bear away and put it through that big scary looking machine. The kid knows what's going to happen and that the teddy bear is going to come out just fine on the other end.
Thanks so much for joining us, Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief at shebuystravel.com.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Rachel Pearson in for Rob Hart. Stocks are trading higher. Joining us this afternoon on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy & Silvest here in Chicago. Paul, let's talk about, let's start with the S&P 500, because it's heading for another winning week here. How much of this is earnings-driven?
I think a fair amount of it is earnings driven, and I think it's a lack of bad news, if you will, on tariffs. And we've seen kind of an uneven tone to some of the earnings. Some companies have been impacted a little bit more by tariffs. than others. And I think there's really less big news items, certainly this week. There's not a lot of economic news items. So it's been a very, very slow and steady grind higher. I think for the month of July, I think there's been only one day where the market has moved more than 1%. But you're right, it's been a great month of July.
Yeah, I mean, Alphabet, Verizon had some pretty strong results there. I'm curious, though, if that momentum is likely to dwindle moving into the back half of this month.
Yeah, I mean, typically July marks the high point. If you would take a look at the seasonal factors, usually August and September are very weak for the markets. So this may mark the high point. We still have tariff deadline is August 1st. We have the Fed meeting July 30th. And then we have the unemployment report August 1st as well. So there's going to be a lot on the plate come next week. So I think investors are continuing to tiptoe into the market as they have all month. But I think we're going to kick off August with a lot of fireworks.
Now, Paul, you touched on this just a moment ago, but trade deal optimism is certainly playing a role in what we're seeing on Wall Street. The U.S. announcing agreements with Japan, Indonesia, and still on the table seems to be talks with China and the EU. So how do these international developments, how much weight should we give them?
Well, I mean, investor, it has changed dramatically since early April. Early April, there was a lot of weight put on these. But as we've kind of gone through and we've seen now how the negotiations have gone, the actions and reactions of the countries, it's not, and I think a lot of investors are looking at it saying, well, it's not as serious as maybe we originally thought. And that's shown up in some of the economic numbers. The inflation numbers, not too bad. GDP growth, still okay. Employment, still fine. And consumers, still spending. Retail sales, good. So I think the read-through by a lot of investors is that, yeah, there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of smoke, but there's no fire.
All right. Even if they're touring a construction site, we are still seeing this push and pull between President Trump and Fed Chair Jay Powell. Whether we're talking about construction of a Fed HQ or if we're talking about inflation, what's your read on the situation here?
Yeah, you're right. It's a lot of even physical push pull, as yep. we saw yesterday.
And back pads. Yep.
I don't think the Fed's going to move. I think that Powell has laid the groundwork for wait and see. Let's see how things turn out. Inflation, the CPI number still in the 2.5 to 3-ish range, depending upon what you're looking at, still above their 2% level. The employment situation still pretty good. So there's not a motive to really cut rates at this point that doesn't move against what the Fed is supposed to be doing, full employment and low inflation. So I don't think there's anything on the table that really makes the Fed have to move here in July. We'll see if he opens up the door for September at his press conference next week.
Thanks so much for the insight. Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy & Silvest here in Chicago. Up next in Entrepreneur Friday, homemade ice cream and local charm. How one woman built a beloved neighborhood staple in LaGrange.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, part deux. And today we meet the woman who's turned homemade ice cream and community spirit into a sweet success story in suburban LaGrange. We welcome Maria Marciniak, owner of Tate's Old Fashioned Ice Cream in LaGrange. Maria, glad to have you with us here for Entrepreneur Friday. Now, Tate's has been a part of the LaGrange community since the late 80s. What inspired you to take the reins in 2010?
Thanks, Rachel. I have actually had our own pizza place also for almost 50 years now. So I've been in the food business forever. And Tate's was up for closing at one time, and we couldn't let this establishment close in our community. So I popped in. I've been making food forever. So learned how to make ice cream from scratch. We make all of our own ice cream here. We source our own ingredients. We come up with our own flavors, and it's just a great fun business.
Yeah.
And we can control our product.
Well, okay, so you touch on fun, and I'm going to add the adjective whimsy here. Because there is a sense of whimsy. Tell me about these little wooden tokens that are in and around town.
Yeah, thanks. So to advertise ourselves and to give out to our community, every day we put in 6 different parks. We put a little wooden token, a little wooden nickel for the olders of us in the past, we call them. And we put them out in the parks around the swings and slides and stuff. And when the kids, even us grown-up kids, find them, it's a free ice cream cone. Pop over to Tate's and redeem it. and we put them downtown, and people also come in and buy a token if they want and give them out for potty training or losing a tooth or a birthday party. So it's a fun, like, little token that makes everybody happy.
Okay, so if you're making your own ice cream in-house, I have to imagine there's a lot of creativity there in coming up with hyper-local flavors. What are some of your favorites?
Oh, love that. Actually, we a way to keep going with business and stuff in this era right now, we have teamed with a bunch of different businesses and community leaders and stuff. So right now, It's My Jam is our favorite going on right now. And that's by Lindsay Paulus, a realtor in our community. She makes this every year. We put her jam into our ice cream in a nice strawberry shortcake ice cream. We have LaGrange Historical Societies. A root beer float. We did a nice ice cream social for them. That's Fifth Avenue Fizz. So they come up with their flavors. We incorporate it into our product. And it's nice because we can work with another business, have an event at our shop, and we also then give proceeds from that event to a local charity, whether it's cars, a community assisted rides, or pet parade charities here in our town. We just support our local community all the way around.
Well, now you've got me thinking, what would a WBBM News Radio ice cream flavor be? It would have to have a lot of candy in there. There's a lot of sweet teeth in this newsroom here. So we'll talk on that.
It.
See if we can get that in the works. But one
colorful
last question.
Flavors, we love it.
Let's talk about, you have to be passionate about this, right? To take over the reins, to keep it alive, to keep innovating. What makes you so passionate about this?
You know what? We've been here forever. We're one of the oldest businesses here in LaGrange, and we're a community staple. Like right now, of course, we're having thunderstorms outside, right? You guys have been reporting about it all day, and it's going through right now. But any of the kids out on bikes, walking, anybody around, come to Tate's. Parents know where to find them. We keep everybody safe. We do different things like turn into a gingerbread house all of November, December. We do a craft and scoop. So if they're looking for something to do today, they're at a park, it starts raining, come on into Tate's. We do a craft and scoop, and you can make the craft here or take it home, have some ice cream. And November, December, it's our gingerbread house craft and scoop. So we have events with princesses. We have charcuterie board ice cream products. It's fun. We always think outside of the box and, you know, keep it moving here. Keep it with fun ideas. We try to be original, but keep that good old-fashioned ice cream sodas, root beer floats. You know, good sweetness here.
I love it. A sweet success story. Thanks so much, Maria Marciniak, owner of Tate's Old Fashioned Ice Cream. It's on South Ashland Avenue in LaGrange. Still to come, appreciating what you have when it comes to your job.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
In today's tough job market, more and more workers realize the grass isn't always greener on the other side, prompting many to think twice before jumping ship. Joining us to discuss it is Jason Wachtel, managing partner at J.W. Michaels & Company here in Chicago. And Jason, we're hearing more and more stories, anecdotally at least, of people who are leaving their job only to come back a few months later. So what's up with this boomerang employee?
So I think what you're seeing in the market is the last couple of years with COVID, people got huge job offers to move to one job to the other, and they didn't really consider the culture of that firm or the loyalty they had to the other firm. But with businesses struggling to make profits, comps are coming down, and people are realizing, wow, the money is not what it was supposed to be. I'm not happy here. I think I made a mistake.
Yeah, but then where is the job market? Because how many people are then saying bye before having something else lined up and now realizing, oof, it's tough out there?
Well, listen, there is still a pretty good job market. It's just that there's a lot of competition for each of these jobs. So I think when people are realizing they made a mistake, they're not necessarily just quitting and then trying to find a job, and nor would I ever recommend that. At J.W. Michaels, when we speak to candidates, if they're unhappy, we always tell them it's better to be looking for a job while you're employed than quitting and not having a job.
Would you say that employers are open to rehiring former staff? I guess it depends how you leave, right? You don't want to burn that bridge to a crisp.
Right. Well, first off, as you said, you never want to burn your bridges. You always want to do everything the right way, give the proper notice. It depends upon the situation. I still think the majority of the time, once you leave an organization, whether it was on a good note or a bad note, you don't usually return. There are some extenuating circumstances for that, but generally employers are not hiring back employees who left them a few years ago.
So Jason, what's one question that every worker should ask themselves before they hit send on that resignation letter?
Is the opportunity I'm going to truly better? Does it make sense for me? Am I just doing it for the money? Because eventually the money could change. The company might not do well, that industry you're in. So it can't just always be about the money. There should be other things that you value that the new opportunity has versus the current opportunity.
Thanks so much, Jason Wachtel, managing partner at JW Michaels & Co. here in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and on the Odyssey app.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.